When the credits roll at the end of a feature film or a TV show, there are a myriad of crew and talent responsible for putting it all together. One title you often see is that of music supervisor, but what do they do, and how do they plug into what a director is looking for? Well, responsibilities for a supervisor can range from recording music to be lip-synced later on camera, acting as a casting director for composers, and overall helping to instill their creative and producing prowess to align with a director's vision. Welcome to Behind the Sound. The first in a series on KCRW about how music and sound are selected for feature film and TV projects. This week, we start with one film that tested the limits of the job. Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood depicted the emergence of the Manson family as they collided with Hollywood in 1969. Sound and music was used to create a feeling that can only be described as immersive. Mary Ramos was the music supervisor on the film, and she joins me now. Hi.
Hello.
So I was listening to the soundtrack to the film the other day. It really is quite incredible. There's so much to it, and the finished film is so dense with sound. You know, when a project like this begins, when do you become involved, and how does it work with the director?
Well, every project is different. Every director's way of working is different. Every director's association with music, orientation to music, approach to music is different. Obviously, with a director like Quentin Tarantino, music is absolutely essential. As a matter of fact, that's where he gets a lot of his inspiration to write his screenplays. So he's very involved in music from the get-go, and for his projects, we'll meet early on in pre-production. And with him especially, it's cool because I'll go into his record room, I'll sit on the couch, I've got my pen and my paper, and I'm scribbling madly while he's talking. You know, he talks fast, describing the story in detail, and he stops to like play an album or play a dusty old cassette tape or some CD that doesn't have a freaking case. And I've been working with him since before Shazam and before Google and before, you know, I've been working with him since the early 90s. So it's always been kind of a fun detective kind of a thing working with him.
Right. I mean, how did you start narrowing down the music? I mean, did you start with 1969 and kind of begin to sort of narrow it down from there?
You know what? This one in particular was very special to him because he grew up in Los Angeles. He grew up as a little kid listening to the radio, KHJ radio. And so it was very nostalgic and very special to him. Honestly, no other movie, I don't think, will you see an entire main title sequence playing in its entirety.
Yeah, and the title sequence, you're talking about the theme song from the TV series FBI.
I mean, it's pretty much an ode to that theme song, which is so swaggery and so awesome.
It does use, as we just talked about briefly, a lot of other sources other than music, not just to give you the feel of 1969, but the feel of what L.A. Was really like during that time. And one of those elements, as you alluded to, was radio, KHJ. For me as well, growing up, I woke up to KHJ in the mornings before school.
Ladies and gentlemen, the beat goes on.
KHJ Los Angeles.
I'm dating myself here, unfortunately, but I think it was the dominant station here at the time. How did that all come together, all the use of all that actual audio?
Like I said, I mean, there were hours and hours of footage that they weren't like official recorded footage. It was a fan who had literally just taped the footage on the air. We were so lucky to be able to find this, and it was hours and hours, and literally, I mean, Quentin would put it on and you know, just go through it and mark stuff that he dug, like the Tanya tanning butter.
A deeper, faster Hawaiian tan. That's what you get when you use Tanya. Yeah, Tanya.
And one of the things that was kind of interesting for me was they used a lot of music in those air checks and stuff. And once in a while, I'd have to try and identify what that music was. It's incredibly hard to go back in time and seek out the rights.
It's absolutely amazing. I know, look, one of the many things that you do is clear songs. I was looking at the Spotify list for this, for the movie. There's so much stuff. I mean, over 250 like drops and tracks. But clearing this stuff is not as simple as a phone call to say, hey, can I just use your music? What were some of the obstacles that you faced in this project?
Sometimes the challenge is because Quentin doesn't want to use a pristine mastered version of the song.
And this one, a perfect example. This is a Hector and the Village Callers.
He wants to use like a scratchy kind of recording that he has, that he's used to listening to. He'll become used to the scratches and the pops and the, you know, the surface noise of the vinyl that he has. And as a matter of fact, that's so important for him, to have his audiences experience the music the way that he experiences it. So he doesn't want it all cleaned up.
If you had to pick one moment in a film or a situation that led to that moment where it was kind of a milestone for you, like really just incredibly gratifying, what would that be?
The Hateful Eight was a special project for me, especially because it was the first time that Quentin really used an original score for it. And he got to work with his icon, Ennio Morricone. He, as a little kid, used to watch spaghetti Western movies. He has an entire Morricone section in his record room. One of the main things was, we really wanted to give the opportunity for the original score to be considered for the Academy Awards. Ennio Morricone had never won an Academy Award for his scores, which is unbelievable.
Right.
And so we had enough of the original score to submit minus about 2 minutes and 30 seconds. And there was one last piece of temporary music that the director really loved. And it was under that last moment when Walton Goggins reads the Lincoln Letter. He's laying there and he reads the content of the Lincoln Letter. And what was in there was a beautiful piece of music from another movie. Quentin loved it. It gave you goosebumps. It was beautiful. And I said, please, can we have the maestro try his hand at this? It would give us enough to qualify for the Academy. And also it would be a beautiful rounding moment on your original score.
And you're arranging all of this. You're sort of working all of this yourself.
Yeah. And so I sent the scene with the temp score to Italy. Italy did not watch the temp score at all. Ennio gave us back something that was nothing like the temp score, but that was incredible. It's got that trumpet. It's got the pathos. It fits the moment absolutely beautifully. And so Quentin was delighted and so happy that it all worked out. And it did work out to the most ultimate result that, you know, Ennio Morricone won an Academy Award finally for his beautiful work.
What's been, in your opinion, your greatest challenge working as a music supervisor?
Ooh, the greatest challenge is, and I have to say this, is that we are often undefined. People don't often know what we do. So they think, you know, that we just pick songs. And it's really important to me and to the Guild of Music Supervisors that we are given, you know, kind of the respect that we really deserve. We're not just picking songs. We're not just DJs. That's an entirely different art form. This is working with directors, working with story, elevating characters, elevating story. A car radio cue is not just a song. It's going to tell you something about where that car is going, who's in the car, what's happening, what happened before, what happened after. It's going to have something to do with the story. And it's really important that we identify what the art of music supervision is, because it's an art.
Mary Ramos, music supervisor on Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and many other feature films as well. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And this is the first in a series called Behind the Sounds on KCRW. Next time, we sit down with the director and the music supervisor from the film Hustlers.